Hey, welcome to the List Film Podcast. Yeah, it's going to get sexy in here today.
I see you guys have gotten a lot more NPR since the last time I was here. Welcome to the List Podcast.
Yeah, a little bit. Today we are sans Jenny and Kevin, but we have Brian with an I, not Brian with a Y.
You still have to specify which Brian with an I, though, because we've had two Brians with an I.
Not Brian Sauer. Brian Finifter from Down in Front.
Hello. I just want to thank you guys and this apartment and the great state of California for hosting this event.
Which we do.
And God bless America.
Yeah.
And for the listeners, he was doing an excellent Barack Obama thumb.
Oh, no, it was a terrible... Oh, yeah, the thumb. Yes. Otherwise, it was a terrible Barack Obama impression.
It's the visual
sells
it, though.
I know Michelle is not how intended us to spend this, our anniversary, but I promise to be terrible.
So, yes, if you haven't figured it out by now, by your the little title on your iPod, iPhone, we are doing political films today. So yeah, what else to say? Brian,
hello.
What's up with you?
Good.
You have a podcast?
I do.
Down in front.
Oh, we're going to do the plug up
front? Down on front?
Down in front, as in, you know, yeah. Hey you, down in front.
Okay.
Which we, kind of our original format, and our format still somewhat is recording our own commentaries.
What happened with the other format? Didn't work.
No, well, our intention was always because we started as we're just recording all our own commentaries to movies.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where my co-host and I were all professionals like you guys in the film industry and, you know, have things to do. And it takes a long time to record a full commentary. And most of the time we do two in a day in a recording session. So it's like, oh, can we like do something that takes up a little less time? And so we kind of switched formats a little bit while still keeping recording commentary sometimes. But we've kind of drifted back into doing a lot more commentaries. So, but it's good.
But you still, I was on your website the other day, and you guys are still doing other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever so often you'll throw that.
Yeah, it's not actually, you know, hard line planned out. Okay, this week, you know, every other week, or you know, this week.
Just when it happens, it happens.
And when it happens, it happens. And we kind of like to keep some flexibility to it.
Nice, nice. For those people who are like, why haven't you guys talked about Star Wars? I say, who the fuck cares?
Oh, are you kidding? It's amazing. It's the hugest news of all time.
Eh.
We actually over at Down in Front convene a special emergency recording session.
Wow,
the night of. We'd never done before.
The night of, we had a podcast and no one brought it up.
Was that the night of?
Yeah,
I actually came over that night.
So when you're listening to this podcast, depending if you listen to it right away, the elections will have just happened last week, and you're either listening from the U.S. or you're pissed off and you have moved out
to Canada or somewhere.
Yeah.
Or to Mars.
Mexico, if you're into drugs.
But as we record this, we are less than 24 hours away.
Yeah.
The election is tomorrow.
Thanks for spoiling the magic, though. People don't know how the fudge is packed. Now they do.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm sorry. Down in front, we gave that up a long time ago. We're like, we'll record like, okay, the day after Prometheus came out, and we're all pissed off about Prometheus, but we're talking about whatever movies in front of us. And this sucks because of Prometheus. Well, okay, just so you know, if you're listening to this from a year from now, Prometheus just came out. So we do that all the time.
Yeah. No, we don't really give a shit. what else is going on with you? You said it's funny. Brian was talking about professionals, and all I thought was like me writing, and I'm like, well,
no women, no kids.
No, I was thinking about just writing and how like it goes like, okay, well, I'll reward myself if I write two pages of the script. I'll reward myself. I can go check Facebook, and then you write two pages, and you're like, okay, one page. I got one page. Okay, I'm gonna go check Facebook.
I would give myself better rewards.
Yeah. Well, wait, and then you're like, well, if I write five pages, I can go look at some porn. Yeah, a little treat. And then you get to two pages, and you're like, that's enough. I'm gonna go over to YouPorn. So that's what the day consists of.
All right.
Oh, is that what your day was today as a film professional?
So how many pages did you write? Just so we get an idea of how many hours you spent looking at porn.
Three.
3 hours or three pages?
3 pages. So it was a really productive day today.
Yeah, I actually had to buy myself a typewriter because trying to type on it or trying to write anything on a computer is just like, I'll look at Facebook for 5 minutes and then I'll start writing. And then 3 hours later, I'm like,
I just installed an app that makes the sound of a typewriter.
Yeah.
That sounds like a much cheaper option than what I did.
Well, also, too, like, you still end up, I have a typewriter, you're still going to end up looking at porn. Just on your phone or your iPad. You're like, the rule is I can't turn on my computer, but I got an iPhone.
I love how you're making your own rules to break.
Hey, yeah. It's just like betting, like when you do mental bets.
I am ashamed to say when I first got my typewriter and I was, you know, like, okay, time to write. And I'm going to sit down at this and write on the computer. I actually, the habit of tabbing over to Facebook is so ingrained in me that sitting at my typewriter, I actually tried to tab over to Facebook, and then I just sat there hating myself for like 5 minutes. Like, I can't believe I tried to do that. You fucking bastard. Yeah. Anyway.
Plus trying to format a typewriter to look like Final Draft. And then you got to transcribe that stuff later.
I haven't even tried writing scripts. I'm just still writing narrative.
You're writing erotic porn?
Yes. I'm writing my own Twilight fan fiction.
You're like, thinking haiku.
Yeah. Haiku porn? I get it. So what else is going on, Adam? Anything new? You're on no sleep right now?
Very little sleep.
Okay.
I've had some sleep, but in the last like 4 days, I think I've had like 12 hours total.
That's healthy.
12 hours of sleep?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You know, working for the man.
Yeah. I've had about that much sleep, but I just staying up watching stuff.
Porn. I know. You told me. You just said that.
Yesterday was Sunday, so a lot of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
HBO, Showtime shows. Yeah. A lot of busy work, guys.
I haven't watched anything. It feels weird. Like when you don't watch. It's been a while since I've watched anything all the way through, where like usually I try to watch at least a new movie a day.
Yeah.
So 4 days have gone by and I haven't watched anything.
Yeah, I like that. I try to do that too. Like something new on Netflix. By new, I mean old. I like to give myself like decades. Like this month, I'm going to do 70s or 60s, you know? I don't know how you go about your Netflix viewing. You just whatever. Freestyle?
I mean, yeah. I inevitably end up going to the horror section first.
Okay. So you go horror, freestyle.
Horror, then thrillers, and then I'll be like, well, let's just see what's new.
Yeah.
I inevitably scroll through looking for something that seems familiar but that I haven't seen a million times. But I'm never willing to take a chance on something I haven't actually seen yet. So like, oh, Stargate, I've seen that a million times. Oh, this, I've seen a million times. Oh, Futurama, I've seen a million times. But it's like, that's what I want to watch. But I want new stuff that I haven't seen of that. But it's like, but then I'm not willing to click on anything that I haven't actually seen. Because like, oh, what if it's terrible?
And then you just stop watching it.
Yeah,
that's what I do.
I know.
I'll see if it's. I'll see how long I can get into something, and if I'm 15 minutes in and I still don't care, I'll just stop and I'll put something else on. Because I hate the first world problems. I hate just the fact that I could spend an hour and a half just looking for something to watch on Netflix.
I do that a lot.
It's so frustrating.
50 million videos on the internet and nothing's on.
Yeah, I'll just be like, all right, I'm just going to pick something.
Yeah.
And I have watched a lot of shitty movies because of this, but I mean, I'll stick with it just because I don't want to go back and search through everything all over again. Unless I have something very specific in mind that I know I want to watch that just came on.
Print yourself the AFI list or something and just
watch it. I should do that. Yeah.
Because honestly, you'll never really be disappointed.
And there's a lot of holes in my classics list that I need to fill.
Nice.
So I should. Yeah,
a lot of holes to be plugged. all right. This is a theme today, guys. So, anything new you guys watched in theaters or theater?
I haven't seen
anything this weekend?
No.
Wow.
I was working and not sleeping.
Wow. Brian?
I think the last thing I saw in the theaters was Looper, which I'm sure is old news that you guys have already talked about. But I enjoyed it. I love Rian Johnson. Although it's got some issues to it.
Oh, yeah.
But overall, I mean, I could watch Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis all day long.
Yeah.
I really want to see Cloud Atlas.
I saw that.
Haven't seen that yet.
Oh, wait, we talked about it.
Yeah, we talked about it last week.
And there's something else that Flight. I really, really want to see. Have either of you guys seen that yet?
No,
I haven't. I want to.
Yeah. That's one. This week I'm going to try.
Yeah.
And Wreck-It Ralph is supposed to be really good.
Yeah, Jenny just saw that. Hopefully we'll talk to her next week about that. All right. Well, we'll go into the Netflix stream of the week, which is Duck Soup, going with today's theme, political films. There you go. Duck Soup, streaming on Netflix.
Marx Brothers.
Marx Brothers.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah. Mm. And that infamous, what is it, Groucho? No, no, I'm sorry, Groucho. It's Harpo. That scene with the mirror. Is it Harpo or Groucho? Who am I thinking of?
If it's a sight gag, I'm guessing it's Harpo.
I think it's Harpo, yeah. Anyway,
check it's been that a while out. Since I've seen Duck Soup.
I just saw it the other day and I forgot. may have been drinking. So anyway, let's get into the list.
Was it a day ending with a Y?
Yeah, okay. It was. Yeah.
You probably were.
Well, today we're talking about political films. Let's get to it. Brian, you want to go first since you're the guest?
Sure. Let me pull mine up here. I don't know if I have them in like a, you know, here's my number five, my number four, my number three.
You're supposed to.
I know. I'm just looking at them right now.
I'm just kidding.
I'm thinking I would put Wag the Dog as my number five. Which.
Okay. I'm going to switch my Wag the Dog to number five. It was okay. It was in a different place, but I'll switch it to number
I'm
five.
Going to put mine in my honorable mentions instead of having it on my list since you both have it on your list.
Do that.
Do you guys have, because I remember this happens, what was the last time I was on? It's like, it's, you guys, there's a lot of overlap most of the time.
We do, well, I mean, we have a lot of,
depending on,
we've
on
never
the topic.
Had, we've never had it where like two people had the exact same list, which yeah. I was thinking about on the way over here, which would be kind of weird.
Which is,
it's bound to happen eventually,
which I
right?
like the overlap because then it just cuts down on time.
Yeah, because otherwise you'd be here for like 5 hours.
Yeah.
It does cut down on time, but I do also like, I like to, lately I like to use it as an opportunity to talk about something else that I wasn't necessarily going to talk about. So since you both have Wag the Dog, we all three had Wag the Dog on our list.
Yeah.
And I love Wag the Dog.
Wag the Dog is great. It's, I very much have problems with conspiracy theories, especially in popular culture. And I think we talked about this when I was here, we were talking about Contagion. And what I loved about Contagion was the fact that they completely played the conspiracy theory trope the other way around from what it's usually done. And like my thing, the thing that pushes my button more than anything else is people talking about the moon landing as a hoax, a conspiracy theory, as you know, done on the soundstage, which is basically the premise of Wag the Dog. It's a, you know, we're going to film not the moon landing in this case, but we're going to film a war on a soundstage and fake the whole thing, which normally would push my buttons, but it's such a smart satire, and it's very obviously doing it for effect of like, look how absurd this whole situation is, and as satire, and it's not a realistic depiction. It works for me.
Yeah, it's written by David Mamet.
Yeah,
directed by Barry Levinson.
Yep.
And it basically what it is, it's, there's a sex scandal. It's right before the election, the re-elections. And Robert De Niro is part of the, what's that thing called? Like the Situation Room type.
The War Room.
The War Room, yeah.
It's based
He's a spin doctor, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And him and Anne Hathaway have to go create this diversion.
Anne Heche.
And what did I say? Anne Hathaway. Wow,
yeah, she was
really young.
She was really young when this movie came out.
She was like in Stepmom. Was she in that?
No.
No. I'm way off today. Well, and Anne Heche and De Niro have to go out and create a diversion for the sex scandal.
So essentially what they do is they create a fake war in Albania. Literally, you know, something they put together on a soundstage, and they cast, you know, a woman actress to play like a fleeing refugee woman with a baby.
Kirsten Dunst.
Is that really?
Yeah.
Is that
Kirsten Dunst? They give her a bag of Tostitos to hold, and they digitally turn it into
baby,
a cat.
Right? Oh, is it a cat? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
The president chimes in. I remember this movie vividly. I saw it way too young, but I loved it. Like,
yeah, the
it
same
seemed
way.
Like it should have been over my head, but I just De Niro and Dustin Hoffman are so great.
Yeah,
but I remember
Hoffman is
scene.
One of those guys I could watch all day long.
he's very, especially in this part.
Yeah,
he's playing the
Hollywood producer.
But they're digitizing a cat, and the president calls in and says, "Oh, can it be a calico cat?" And like Dustin Hoffman's just muttering under his breath, "Oh yeah, he wants to be a calico."
Well, I remember I have also very vivid memories of this when it came out, because it came out right around the time of the Lewinsky's, the breaking of the Lewinsky's gang scandal. And at the time, it was Clinton also intervened in Kosovo at around the same time. So
yeah.
I think this movie came out right before the scandal broke. And then when Clinton went into Kosovo with the Lewinsky scandal, everybody was like, oh my God, it's exactly like Wag the Dog.
Yeah.
Which, in point of fact, it's not. Clinton was actually doing it. You know, he had already made the decision, and, you know, just bad timing, unfortunately.
He had already had the oral sex performed.
He had already had the oral sex, and he had already made the decision to intervene militarily. But it was right down to the fact of the movie's title. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, the phrase, the tail wags the dog. It's like, it was a very odd, surreal situation of like, yes, here's this absurd, you know, comedy movie, and now this exact scenario seems to be playing out in front of us.
Kind of like the North Hollywood shooting. Heat had just come out like a year before, too.
Okay.
Oh, I thought the Heat was based off of the North Hollywood shooting.
No.
It's the other way around. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. See, there you go. That's a perfect example.
Like, we should do that.
You also mentioned Apollo 13, and no, you didn't mention it. You mentioned fake moon landing and thought of Capricorn 1.
Yeah, I was thinking of Capricorn 1, yeah.
Yeah. O.J. Simpson.
That's a terrible movie.
Pre-stabbing.
Yes, it is.
It's Elliot Gould. What are you talking about?
It's Elliot Gould is great. I had to drop off or try to drop off flowers to his place once from the production of a movie that I was working on.
You had nothing to do with film, just wanted to
wanted to give Elliot Gould flowers.
Really like his work.
I loved you in MASH.
Hey, he was great in...
Really love you in Friends.
And he was great in Contagion, too.
Yeah, he was good.
But yeah, Capricorn 1 is a perfect example of we're going to take that, you know, conspiracy theory, fake something on a soundstage trope, and just... doing it terribly, doing it in, you know, very 70s style, but that's a great example of a movie pushing my buttons in that regard.
Yeah, I dig that. I like scandal movies, political scandal films. There's a couple of them in
Murder in 1600,
especially when Wesley Snipes. He always bet on black.
Wesley Snipes and Diane Lane.
If Passenger 57 taught us anything,
absolute power.
What's the other one? Yes. The General's Daughter.
General's Daughter. That one's dirty.
Basic.
Oh yeah,
that's a good movie.
Is that really John political? McTiernan. That's more military.
I guess military. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Military right. industrial complex.
Wag the Dog from 1997.
The supporting cast.
Yeah.
Dennis Leary, William Nelson, William H. Macy.
Josh Molina, Oliver. No, I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. Woolworth.
Yeah.
Anyway. Dennis Leary.
Is the Fat King.
Which is another one of those things, like, you know, coming back to it years later, when watching it as a kid, it's like you have no idea who any of these people are. And then you come back, it's like, oh, yeah, Dennis Leary was in this. Holy crap.
Yeah, I remember watching, especially when Willie Nelson's singing the song, all the like musical cameos.
Yeah,
there's a lot of cool like, what is that song? We Are the World. What is it called?
It's it's a parody.
It's a parody. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
good old shoe.
Yeah,
or the Simpsons parody, Sending Our Love Down the Well.
So that's Wag the Dog from 1997. Mm-hmm. Brian and I is number 5. I have a honorable mention number 5. It was a tie for me, but I'll get to that.
Okay. Well, it was an honorable mention for me.
Okay.
So now my new number 5 is from 1992, and it's The Distinguished Gentleman.
Ooh.
Eddie Murphy. I had to do it.
I like where this is going.
I had to do it. I love this movie. He's a con man who gets elected to the Senate or Congressman. He becomes a congressman because he has the same name as the state's former congressman who died. It was Jeff Johnson. Was the former congressman, and Eddie Murphy's character's name was Thomas Jefferson Johnson, and so he just drops off the Thomas and gets elected as Jeff Johnson.
Oh.
Because everyone thinks it's the incumbent.
Nice.
And it's great, and it's funny, and what's his name? Blaine Smith is like the sort of evil congressman that he's trying to get in good with, and then sees the error of his ways. Charles S. Dutton's in it as a preacher. It's fun. I love it. It's got a great supporting cast also. Joe Don Baker, and who is Victor Rivers is one of like his Eddie Murphy's cohorts in conning people.
Who's Victor Rivers?
You'd know him if you saw him. He's been in a bunch of things. In this, he plays Armando. He's in like The Mask of Zorro.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know.
It looks familiar.
He's really, they're all really funny. Like his whole crew, Chi McBride. Isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just a fun movie. It's silly.
What year is it again?
92.
I don't remember this movie. I remember seeing like the ads on TV, I don't remember ever watching it. Like it's like I like some sort of time warp where I missed the movie.
I don't remember ever seeing
it. And it's Eddie Murphy.
It's Eddie Murphy.
I was really I'm always
rated R Eddie Murphy still.
What before the kids what year? Movies. Yeah, so before
92.
Okay.
Yeah, so this was like after Boomerang. I mean this
so
what,
when
prime.
He was still a deal.
Yeah, when he was still a bit well, I still think he's a big deal. Oh, he's just making movies for kids. I've heard that he thinks he's lost his edge, which I disagree with. I think he could still be funnier than most of the big black comedians who are getting movies right now anyway, who are 90% rappers. I'd take Eddie Murphy over any of them.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Eddie Murphy go back to those kind of
Me too.
Biting satire roots.
Yeah.
And get away from... What,
all the
Dave
kids movies.
And, yeah,
Beverly
a
Hills Cop.
Words.
The TV show?
Huh?
Beverly Hills Cop is a TV show?
It's going to be.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
He's going to TV?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's, I think it's going to be FX. It's going to be his son. Played by the guy from Tropic Thunder. The guy
Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah.
Ben Stiller?
No, Al Pacino. Or what's his name? I think he calls himself Al Pacino.
Oh.
The rapper?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? I don't know his name.
I don't
name,
know. I don't remember
name.
The actor's name, but yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be him playing Axel Foley's son.
Oh, okay.
And Axel Foley will make reoccurring.
I had not heard about that.
Come in and out of the series. Yeah.
I still want a rated R Eddie Murphy movie, though. I mean,
me
that's,
too.
FX show is pretty close to rated R.
Yeah. No, totally. And also, FX is stepping up with their shows. So, if it is going to end up in FX, it's going to be a good show.
Well, I think every FX show is...
It's going to be like Rescue Me, but just, you know, Beverly Hills.
Yeah. the other day I was watching American Horror Story, and it got... You were seeing... I was very close to seeing Tit, dude. And I was like, whoa, this is really graphic for like basic cable. But
that was one of their taglines. FX, a tit a minute.
Yeah.
Really close to tits.
We
guys.
Almost show you tits. But it's a good show. Every FX show is a good show.
And Distinguished Gentleman is a good movie.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
From
good Eddie Murphy.
From, what'd you say? 92?
92. Not a 2000.
All right. Well, my honorable mention is from, I'll tell you what it is. It's a movie with Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas, and it's called 7 Days in May. I'll read you the synopsis. U.S. military leaders plot to overthrow the president because he supports a nuclear disarmament treaty, and they fear a Soviet sneak attack. So it's kind of like a Cold War type military takeover.
Is it from the Cold War?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, let me tell you. It came out in 1964. So, when was the Cold War?
Yeah, that was during the Cold War.
What was the span?
That was the
no,
middle.
No, but what was the span?
Like 1945 to yesterday.
Okay.
No, I mean 1945 to the fall of the Berlin Wall. Yeah.
I knew when it, of course, the Berlin Wall, but I don't remember where really it started.
The bomb.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, it really started as soon as World War II ended. But I mean, if you really want to put a start date on it, you would say, you know,
I want the exact date, dude.
You call it the Berlin Airlift? I mean, the real beginning of the Berlin Wall, Cold War?
All right.
I guess. I mean, that would be what I
would do. Isn't it crappy that you could buy, like, pieces of the Berlin Wall on eBay?
I think it's crappier that you could probably get away with selling a piece of your house as the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
Just put like spray paint on it. Someone's like, oh, yeah, I got a piece. Like, no, dude, that's drywall.
Yeah.
But
that's stucco, dude.
This is just like my kind of like my extra. There was a tie. I really, it's a pretty good movie with Kurt Douglas. It's one of the ones that I'll rewatch. Burt Lancaster, Kurt Douglas, Ava Gardner, Frederick March. So check that out if you get a chance. Old movie. That's my number five, in conjunction with Wag the Dog.
Okay.
Brian,
there we go.
Number four.
I would put Election at number four with Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick.
That was my honorable mention. I took it out.
Oh yeah,
it's my number seven.
Oh okay. I will get to I guess my honorable mentions at some point because I actually had a question. With this we're doing focus on like American politics movies, right?
Nope.
No,
we could do anything.
Okay. Well, I kept my list is, you know, American. I kept it, but there
nice
was
two.
Because I was looking at, I was reading what other people put together lists of top 10 political movies or whatever. And there's some answers or some things that I found surprising. Like, a lot of people put Dr. Strangelove. on the political.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I would consider that more of a war movie or a war satire, but there's a lot of politics in there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. My number four, say, election, which is great because it boils down. I think there's two sides to politics, or at least to humanity within politics. You're either in it because you want to try to make, you know, positive change in the world, change things for the better, that kind of idealistic side, or you're in it for your own, you know, power and your own glory and your own tribal acquisition, all of that sort of corrupt things. And that when you boil that aspect of it down, the really petty side, it distills the petty nature of the whole thing. And election, I think, does that wonderfully by putting it all into this high school environment and then cranking it up to 11. So it's you have these characters that are doing these absurd, crazy things within the context of a really mundane, you know, boring high school election. Mm-hmm. And going to kind of these lengths with the kind of passion that people have on the national stage of, yes, I must, like Mitt Romney must be president because his dad was trying to be president, all of this stuff. And so he'll say these absurd things and be this absurdly awkward man that he's not to try to capture this prize just because he feels like he should have this prize. Spoiler alert, I'm a Democrat, I guess. I don't know. I don't think I'm saying anything too terribly controversial about Mitt Romney, though. But, you know, that
you mentioned his name. That was more than I was planning on doing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. but that basic, and obviously Mitt Romney's not alone in that. He's not the first, nor will he be the last person to enter politics, so that kind of sense. But election.
Because of your dad. That's always a good idea.
Well, just the sense of, like, I deserve this for some reason. It's more about me capturing this prize than it is me getting to this position so I can do some good for other people with it, which there are plenty, you know, a lot of people are very cynical about politics. I am less cynical than others. And I think that there are a lot of people in public service and elected office that do that because that's their goal is, and, you know, maybe some of them get corrupted along the way or the system, the establishments, you know, makes them more cynical. But there are a lot of people that enter it with good intentions, but there are a lot of people who don't, not so much. And election takes that side of the coin and I think just deconstructs it wonderfully by putting it in this really mundane, small fish pond setting to it, context to it.
It's funny that you talk about that. I'll start talking about this now since you brought it up. I wasn't going to talk about it.
Were you guys not planning on getting specific?
I wasn't really planning on getting specific. But
okay.
He's voting for Romney.
Yeah, I'm voting for Romney now. I feel like everybody who gets into politics has to have like a certain percentage of their personality be really narcissistic.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Like you because like there's no bone in my body that says, you know what, politics? Good idea. We should get into that ever. And I mean, I'm very cynical. And just because how long has democracy been around and when have we ever agreed, like, you know what? We're doing pretty fucking good. Even when, like, Clinton was president, which my favorite president, JFK? Mm-hmm. No, Clinton. Why? Because he's a badass.
Clinton did save us from a nuclear.
Yeah. But I'm saying, like, nobody's ever been like, man.
And get us to the moon.
We're fucking awesome, guys. We love how everything's going. We're always going to be fucking unhappy. So I don't know. That's why
I think that's happened plenty of times. I think everybody, not necessarily Obama in this case, but plenty of people make that argument at least when they're running for re-election. They go, "No, yeah. Guys, things are pretty good." And of course, the other guy is going to be like, "No, it is end of the world."
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wish I could go back in time and kind of experience the. I guess zeitgeist of other moments in, you know, our political identity, like, you know, in the post-war era when we had, you know, a solid middle class. Sure, we had the Damocles dagger of nuclear annihilation hanging over our head, but things were, at least from an economic standpoint, more stable. You had Social Security and everything existed in a much more stable configuration than it does these days. So I'd be interested to see that kind of that dynamic, you know, in like Eisenhower. You know, Eisenhower was a Republican, at least, you know, he ran as a Republican, even though if he wasn't, you know, as partisan or an ideologue as people today. But he was like, yeah, Social Security is good. It works. Yes, it's fine. And, you know, go America. Factories are humming and let's keep them humming. It's like, that's, it's just a very different idea of things than we have today.
Yeah. To bring it back to entertainment industry with this political thing.
Yes.
You just named Eisenhower.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember Married with Children with when they thought Darcy, Marcy Darcy's husband, Jefferson, was a commie? And Al Bundy had a had a president off with him, like they were going to name presidents back and forth. And Al Bundy goes Eisenhower, and then Jefferson would go like he'd start off with like Washington, and then Eisenhower. Al Bundy only named Eisenhower like for like 10 picks. But anyway, all right, where are we at? Election. Alexander Payne. That was I guess Citizen Ruth was kind of his first kind of big breakthrough, and then this was kind of his second thing that kind of really kind of had a lot of like you know, award buzz and stuff. And it kind of broke out Reese Witherspoon, right?
I remember that was being her. I mean, I was young. I was really too young to know Reese Witherspoon, but
you're like, she's good looking.
No, I don't know about all that. Yeah,
you don't like her ponytail,
but I do like her in this performance, and I like her a lot more than say in. You know, we're talking about Eddie Murphy and Eddie Murphy losing his edge.
Yeah.
I think Reese Witherspoon had much more of an edge to her in that day than she's had since.
And Matthew Broderick, isn't it? Kevin Kline.
I love Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. So there you go from 1999 election. Alexander Payne. Adam?
Hold on. I've been Googling this quote that you're talking about. The presidency has been making me think of.
What's that?
That anyone who is capable of getting themselves elected president on no account should be allowed to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who said that?
Is it Douglas Adams?
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a long held, you know, thing is like, yeah, if you're the kind of person that wants to be president, you should not be president. And that's
yeah, it's like, if you feel you deserve it, especially, I think one step further than that, if you feel entitled to the presidency, definitely not a leader I want to follow. I don't really want to follow most leaders, though.
I feel like you should pick presidents like you'd pick, like, camp counselors, you know what I mean? Like, you don't...
Whoever's coolest.
Well, you know, like, you want
to
go.
About to learn that one the hard way.
When you're going to take a bunch of little, you know, 12-year-old Boy Scouts.
Whoa.
And I'm going there. You don't go.
I don't want you to go there.
Who wants to take all these Boy Scouts out to the woods all alone? The first guy to raise his hand?
Don't
probably
pick
a pedophile.
That guy.
Don't pick that guy. The guy that wants to watch football and doesn't want anything to do with the fucking Boy Scouts? That's the guy you gotta pick.
Sounds like you were just talking about the movie Bushwhacked.
Maybe. That's how we should pick a president. We shouldn't have a president, and we just randomly pick a citizen of the U.S.
Isn't that how the
Romans did it? They just pick someone to defend the city? I'm just going based off of the Dark Knight.
There's one of my favorite series of books called The Mars Trilogy, which is a science fiction. You know, it's all about the colonization and terraforming of Mars over several hundred years. And you follow these kind of characters over a couple of centuries. That's the government they eventually set up in the books. It's like jury duty. Yeah. Random citizens get appointed to the executive council, which is, you know.
You still have a lot of people going, oh, fuck, dude. And I got elected today, man.
And
damn
it's one of the main characters, like, first do it, you know, the first generation of those people, you know, it's one of the main characters you've been following since the beginning. She's like, you know, she's kind of been the architect of Martian government from the beginning. So she gets picked and she's like, God damn it. I just wanted to get away from this shit. But that's basically what it is. It's jury duty. So, I mean. I would love to see somebody try that system. I don't think it would work on the scale of us, you know, the United States, probably. But it would be one of those things that it'd be really interesting to see.
It sounds like the system in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. When he comes up, he's like, we have King. Who
the Constitution.
Yeah, how'd you get that?
One of my favorite skits of all time. Listen, strange women lying in ponds, handing out swords. No basis for a system of government.
Yes.
If I went around claiming to be emperor just because some tot with a scimitar.
Exactly.
Well, where are we at? To 1999.
I think you are
election.
Number four. Yes.
Oh, Adam, you went already?
No, I didn't.
Oh, sorry.
All right. My number four. I'm going to reorganize my list a little bit here. Go up a year, from 1992 to 1993. Dave.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love Dave. I mean, Kevin Kline, I think No, I was going to say this is the movie where I'm like, oh my gosh, I love Kevin Kline. He's the best. But that was probably I Love You to Death was the movie where I realized how much I like Kevin Kline.
Not Silverado?
I saw Silverado later, I feel like. I Love You to Death is one of those movies my mom watched. She brought home I Love You to Death and Always, both of which I watched all the time. I loved them both, regardless of what anyone has to say about either of those movies.
Yeah.
But Dave, I remember watching, I taped off of like HBO or something back in the day. Kevin Kline plays a guy who impersonates the president who looks a lot like him. And then they decide that they need a double for the president. So they hire him to do this. And I believe it's a remake of Moon Over Peridor. Richard Dreyfuss and Raul Julia. And here, Kevin Kline plays the Richard Dreyfuss part. And Frank Langella plays the Raul Julia part, who's like the muscle campaign, behind the president. Yeah.
The Karl Rove, we would say today.
Yeah, basically.
Raul Julia is a man.
He is. Frank Langella does a pretty good job in this movie, too, though.
Frank Langella is great.
That's a toss-up. You know, like, you know, who could we get to replace Raul Julia's part? Frank Langella.
Well, so they take it in a different way. Yeah. Because in Moon Over Peridor, it's like the whole Latin thing. And and then here, it's definitely the sort of blowhard, right-wing American guy you don't want to mess with. Where, like, I could see... But Frank Langella is kind of creepy in this movie. Also, at the same time, though, when I saw this, I was just thinking of him as Skeletor. I'm like, he's going to mess somebody up.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, thinking of him as Nixon. I mean, obviously, that comes later, but it's like, damn, Frank Langella, you're scary.
Yeah.
I do not want to see you in an actual political arena, unless you're on my side.
Any Solieri? That's creepy, too.
Who else? Sigourney Weaver's in it. She plays the actual president,
first lady,
wife. And that's, I mean, that's the whole, just the craziness of this where, so while Kevin Kline is impersonating the president has a heart attack. And so he has to go on pretending to be the president because Frank Langella wants to keep his power over the presidency. Yeah. And it's kind of like Kevin Kline realizing what's going on and just rising to power, like slowly realizing this is something he wants to do, and he can do it well. Like, he wants to actually be the people's president, and it's great. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. It's really funny. I love, there's a bit where he's at an auto workers plant, and he's got the two big robotic arms. He's like, I once caught a fish this big, but with the robotic arms. Ving Rhames is in it with hair.
Really?
As the head of his security team.
Oh,
the Secret Service.
That's right.
Ben Kingsley plays the vice president.
Yeah.
And it's the most... Ben Kingsley can be so... hilariously funny by doing nothing at all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's so damn serious.
He's got the same thing as, like, Patrick Stewart. He's so dignified and just British and Shakespearean that, like, if you just have something funny around him and you have it with a straight face, it's the most hilarious thing in the world.
And that's exactly what they do in this movie. The first time you see him, they open the door and he's like, oh, the vice president's here to see you. And they open the door and he's holding like an African mask and a spear because he's just come back from a goodwill trip to Africa and he thinks the president is mad at him. And he's just standing there and it's hilarious. Doesn't say anything, just a look on his face. Funny.
Who's the director of this again? Do you know?
Ivan Reitman.
Ivan Reitman.
Mm, yeah.
Wow. I forgot about that.
Written by Gary Ross.
Ooh.
Yes. Dave is actually, I have a tie for my number three, and Dave is one of those.
There you go.
It's really funny. Charles Grodin as his friend.
Yeah.
His friend is an accountant, and he brings his best friend in to help him balance the nation's budget.
Yeah.
And he's like, if I ran a business like this, I would go out of business.
Yeah. Which, from a political standpoint, I hate that analogy and the whole, well, if you ran your household budget like this, you'd be a terrible budget. Like, yeah, but they're not actually the same thing, so don't use that analogy. But sorry, that's actual politics. But yeah, I love Dave. The scene that I remember that I really love is when they're visiting the school and they're doing the whole photo op thing, and then there's the one kid just off by himself, and, you know, he's not happy for whatever reason. Kevin Kline comes over and is, you know, and then he has a genuine moment, and then the press corps kind of notices and descends on it and turns it into this, you know, the typical photo op thing. And just that, I think that's a great encapsulation of that movie. It's like, oh, okay, here's all of this artifice that we put into this process of electing people and the presidency and politics and governance and all of that. And we have slowly disconnected actual human moments and human connection from this process of, okay, we as a group are choosing to pick this person to represent us and look after us and, you know, look out for our best interests collectively as a nation. But then when all of this artifice and pageantry kind of gets in the way and screws everything up, and you get people like Karl Rove or, you know, Frank Langella or whoever, like, you know, pulling these strings.
Not Frank Langella himself.
No, no, yeah, but Frank Langella's character.
Bob Alexander.
Bob, yeah. You know, Frank but, you know, people like those pulling these strings and pulling, you know, playing the games for the sake of winning the game. Disconnecting the process from that basic
goal. So much so that in the movie, in the scene after this, there's something, this is where, that's like the beginning of Dave's awakening to what's really going on, where he realizes that he's just a patsy.
Yeah.
Because then the next day, Sigourney Weaver comes in and she's yelling at him like, so what was that fucking show with the kid where you cut that program anyway? And Dave realizes that Frank Langella was like, oh yeah, no, we can't afford that. And that's when he brings Charles Grodin in to balance the budget so that he can save his wife's program.
Yeah.
But just the way that that artifice that you're talking about just divides... I mean, even though she's not, I'm pretty sure by this point she already knows that he's not really, she's has it in her mind.
She doesn't know, she's not quite sure what the answer is, but she knows something is up.
Yeah.
And she's trying to figure it out at that point in the movie.
But even before this, her and the actual president's relationship has deteriorated based on this artifice where he's
becoming this person. It's a Citizen Kane kind of thing where they started out as human beings and they've slowly drifted apart over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I love about Dave and why I've kind of paired it with Bulworth is, like I was saying before, like the two sides of, you know, you have either people who set out to do good or the people who set out to win the game for themselves. I love, and I think the height of a good political themed movie is finding that juncture between the two and then flipping it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, either creating some kind of new situation or flipping those two aspects on their head in the way that I think both Dave and Bulworth do. Dave is like, okay, here's all this artifice, and we're just going to plop this real guy in there and then flip it on his head, and he's going to realize, oh, you can actually... There's a flip side to playing the game to actually doing good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Bulworth basically does the same thing.
Don't get into Bulworth. We're going to talk about it.
Okay, all right. All right. So I'll hold off. But it's I think there's a thematic similarity.
Yeah. Well, good pick. That's in my honorable mention. And we're kind of staying away from overlap a little bit, but I like it. We might have an overlap with Bulworth, but all right. My number four is from 2008, and it's Frost Nixon.
Ah, yeah. Speaking of Frank Langella.
Frank Langella. Michael Sheen, Sam Rockwell, Kevin Bacon, Oliver Platt, Rebecca Hall, Toby Jones.
Who's the Toby Jones?
Toby Jones plays Swifty.
Okay.
Lazar. 50 Lazar.
None of those words mean anything to me.
All right. Well, anyway, it's Ron Howard's dramatic retelling of the post-Watergate television interview between British talk show host David Frost and former president, disgraced president, Richard Nixon.
Resigned.
Almost impeached. I love this because it was kind of like it was good. It just, I had read the story, I had seen the documentaries, but it just... It's amazing how tense Ron Howard could make something, and you just realize like how good he is.
It's amazing how good, as Apollo 13 being one of my favorite movies, but I didn't know anything about Apollo 13 when the movie first came out, and Ron Howard's movie was my introduction to it. But it's amazing how good Ron Howard is at creating tension or building tension out of scenario or situation that you already know the outcome to.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, as even knowing nothing about Apollo 13, you walked into the movie theater knowing that they were going to survive, probably. And Frost Nixon, you know, basically how it ends.
Yeah.
But he still manages to create such amazing tension in those situations.
Well, just the two, Michael Sheen and Frank Langella playing off of each other.
Yeah.
They just play off of each other so well.
Yeah.
And this, where he zings him and like, he doesn't show it on his face, but you like, he shows it, like Michael Sheen sees it. It's so good.
Yeah.
I really love the way they play off of each other.
Yeah. And it has one of my favorite actors he's slowly becoming one of my favorite actors of all time, which is Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy can't do, I've been rewatching just the entire Sam Rockwell catalog. And the reason
starting with Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
Did you start with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yes.
Sam Rockwell enough to watch Charlie's Angels just for his performance in that movie.
Oh, yep. Wow.
Yeah.
That is a fandom.
Yeah. But I like, he's just so charming and likable and fun. Like when he's dancing around. Just,
oh, yeah.
Sam Rockwell dancing at anything is just entertaining.
Well,
to watch.
The two things he does really well. He can smoke a cigarette like not a lot of people can on film. Because a lot of people that even are smokers will smoke on film and it doesn't look natural. But Sam Rockwell does it where, I don't know if it's because I used to smoke and I still want to smoke, but it's really appealing. Like, I'm like, damn it, I want a cigarette. And he does it in Charlie's Angels. He's smoking and he's dancing and he's a good dancer and he's a good smoker. There we go.
Yeah. I hope that's on his resume in the skill section. Good smoker.
Smokes, comma, dances, comma, driver's license.
Yeah. And speaks Spanish, but not really. I just put it on my resume.
Probably could. Kama speaks Thermian.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really fun. Like Brian said, we know the outcome of this. It's still really tense. Just like the Apollo 13. It doesn't matter. You're like, you kind of, if a good movie, if a good biopic or historical like drama is well done, you forget the outcome of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I haven't seen Argo, but I imagine I've been hearing good things about it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, what's great about Frost Nixon, like you were saying, it's in terms of, it's just two guys talking back and forth to each other, but the way they react and interact with each other, it really shows you like how, you know, talking heads movies gets, you know, thrown as like a derogatory label at movies. Oh, it's just a talking heads thing. You know, it's like, oh, it's boring. It's talking heads. But this movie is literally two talking heads at each other through most of it.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly tense and riveting, and it shows you the power of words when done right. When words matter and are, you know, in the right context and connected to human emotion and human behavior and real consequences, words matter a huge, huge amount.
Mm-hmm.
And this Frost Nixon is a great distillation and expression of that.
It's
It is talking heads. And two lives, these two guys, the lives of these two guys hinge on the words that they say back and forth.
Mm. And before I forget, Ron Howard has another biopic coming out next year, 2013. It's called Rush. And this is what I'm talking about. This is where Apollo 13 is your realm, Brian.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's coming to my realm.
Yeah.
Formula One racing.
Oh.
Niki Lauda biography. Formula One racer.
I thought you were talking about the John Cusack Rush Limbaugh movie.
No, there's gonna be
a bunch of overlapping rushes.
Rush
about drugs.
John
Rush
Cusack
about
is doing a Rush Limbaugh movie.
Rush about,
yes,
that's what I've heard.
Wow,
that's a rumor.
He's gonna play Rush Limbaugh.
Spoiler alert. but yeah,
I've heard crazier
I
things.
I hope they do. I just want to see John Cusack playing Rush Limbaugh doing the bit where he's mocking Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's disease. I'm like,
he was shaking all along.
Oh, that's just
that tub of fat.
And Frost Nixon is written by what's his name?
Peter Morgan,
who's an amazing writer. He wrote Frost Nixon, The Queen, the Idi Amin movie, Last King of Scotland, The Damned United.
He wrote Rush.
Yeah. Yeah, so should be, not only is Nick Frost good, but looking forward to Rush.
Nick Frost.
Nick Frost is good.
Yeah.
Is he in Frost Nixon?
So yeah, that is from 2008, Nick Frost. Frost Nixon. Damn you, Adam. Frost Nixon. To you, Brian.
All right. Well, should we do Bulworth now or should we hold off on it?
Let's hold off on it.
All right. Well, so I'll move on to... So saying that Bulworth is tied with Dave for me in three, I'm going to move on to Charlie Wilson's War.
Yeah.
Which, actually, I'm going to just go ahead and say that my two top spots are both Aaron Sorkin.
Okay.
And I am not ashamed of that at all. I think that's a perfectly right scenario. Charlie Wilson's War is another true story about a congressman from Texas who basically in the 80s was known for his drinking and his whoring and for not taking anything seriously, never having to worry about re-election, so just living the high life. And then coming to get involved in basically arming the Afghan freedom fighters, as they were termed at the time, and known more recently as the Taliban. But we'll get into that part. But arming these Afghan freedom fighters to fight a secret resistance war against their Soviet occupiers.
Yeah.
And just this whole process of this guy, again, this juncture and this flipping of the really cynical side of politics, mm-hmm. and then flipping it over into this really idealistic side, and watching this transition of the people involved. And in this case, it's a true story. It's the same guy. It's not kind of like the magic bean of Dave, where it's, you know, you're just kind of shuffling in a new guy. It's the same guy, just through the sheer power of you know, witnessing these events. You know, he goes and he sort of gets caught up in it, and it's kind of a fun thing for him at first, and then he actually goes on this tour of Afghanistan and sees kind of the devastation of these villages, and then he gets, you know, really legitimately, sincerely behind the cause, and, you know, really fights for it, and, you know, is the driving force behind what eventually snowballs into the Soviets having to withdraw from Afghanistan, which is the first kind of...
Wait, I thought that was because of Rambo.
That's what I thought.
Oh, that's my number one political movie. I forgot.
Rambo
Sorry.
3.
Yeah. Rambo 3,
that's
yeah.
It's Charlie Wilson's War is the prequel to Rambo 3.
You see, Charlie Wilson was responsible for the funding
Rambo.
That
right.
led to Rambo
well,
being armed.
He's the one that sent the colonel to go get
yes.
Rambo.
Yes.
They're like, look, we're not going to win this war unless Rambo's in the fight.
But then Rambo didn't go. So then after the colonel got yeah. captured, Rambo's like, oh, I got to go save the colonel.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. But then it's that process, and then, you know, spoiler alert, the end of the movie. The end of the movie is just such a kick to the gut, because it's, you know, they pull off this miracle yeah. of winning this war and getting all of this funding. You know, the start is them, you know, trying to scrape together these pennies to give these guys, you know, rocket launchers or whatever to fight, real weapons to fight the Soviets. And they manage to pull funding after funding and really getting this war, you know, giving them the tools they need. And then at the end, it's like, okay, yes, we've driven the Soviets out, and now we just need to spend a fraction of what we spent already to build schools and roads to keep this from ever happening again, and to, you know, actually help these people. And then it's like the other people in Congress that he has to deal with go, yeah, no, we're not gonna spend that money. And it's just this horrible, horrible kick to the gut of like, you just and, you know, Charlie Wilson's War came out in, I want to say, 2007. Mm-hmm. Actually, I remember watching it in the theater with my mom and walking out, checking my phone. And that night, Mike Huckabee had won the Iowa primary. So I was like, oh, okay. So I vividly remember that. But yeah, it's again, that great flip of cynicism to idealism.
I think that movie, I think the original script ended with 9/11.
Did it really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I think the director was like, let's stay away from that.
It's too close.
Yeah.
I can see that, because, I mean, even as it is, it's like, okay, this is, the connection is really kind of obvious. And if it weren't, if this were a fictional account, then you would be like, oh my God, you guys are way too close to the nose.
Yeah.
You're spoon feeding me this, you know, this morality lesson. But it's one of those things like, this is real life. This is what actually happens. So fuck us for screwing it up so bad. Like, for being so stupid that when you lay it out in the movie form, it's like, oh, it's so obvious. And yet we still managed to fuck it up.
I love Philip Seymour Hoffman in this.
Yes,
yeah.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. I love Tom Hanks.
His first scene
yeah.
where he breaks the dude's door, the glass
yeah.
door.
And he goes to apologize, and then he curses him out. Yeah. I love that. And
Amy Adams,
Nichols,
I forgot
right?
she was in this.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. It was one of her first big roles. Yeah,
no.
She's supporting in this, but this was the next thing that she got where she was breakout. It was like, oh, yeah, she was that girl from Charlie Wilson's War.
No.
No?
She was the girl from Catch Me If You Can. She was
you're right.
Yeah.
That was before this. Okay.
You look puzzled at him.
I mean, I didn't feel like she really broke out after
yeah.
Catch Me If You Can, though.
Yeah. See, I would agree with that. Like, I know that
I
she
liked her
in
Catch
it.
Me With You Can, but I don't... I mean,
remember her from that. I distinctly remember... Well,
I do. I'm not saying I don't remember
had a crush
that.
On her
I'm just saying that wasn't, for me,
stalking her.
When she
know.
Broke out.
Sorry, guys.
Because Enchanted was before Charlie Wilson's War, or the same year, anyway.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were both 2007.
Yeah.
Then I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're out of your element. Donnie.
Junebug to me was...
Yeah, that you're right. But I remember like being like, oh, yeah, it's a girl, totally the girl from Catch Me If You Can. And
yeah.
The dude from the OC.
Oh, I'm
and
sorry. No, it was Serving Sarah.
I remember, you know what, speaking of Junebug, that's when like I was like, dude, this Ben McKenzie's amazing. and I'm a fan, and I still stand by it.
Okay.
Watch Southland. All right, where are we at? Three?
That's right.
That was my number two.
Oh, sorry.
Wait, but because he made you skip.
Yeah, because I made you switch. Yeah. So that was three. Adam, to you.
Okay, so for my number three, this is a tough one. What do I want to do here? I don't even know. Whatever. I'm going to do 1983's The Dead Zone.
Ooh. I like where you're going with this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's about an election.
Yeah, it is.
And getting into political office and people.
I was trying to figure out how you were going to get public image. How are you going to get horror into this list?
Done.
I didn't see that coming. As I was like looking at you here, and then the raptor just got me. Yeah. Another raptor got me in the side.
Well, I mean, that was how that was how Stephen King approached the novel to begin with. He wanted to figure out a way to get you to sympathize with an assassin, and so like he knew how he wanted it to end, and he like kind of backtracked to Johnny's beginning and just kind of worked his way up. But I mean, Martin Sheen as this elected official who Christopher Walken foresees basically ending the world by pushing the big red button and killing us all. So he realizes he has to devote himself to stopping him, and it's great. And Martin Sheen is really scary in this movie.
Yes,
David Cronenberg just grossing. I feel like I've talked about this before. But I can't talk about this movie without mentioning the scissor scene.
Yes.
I don't even want to watch anything that can be referred to as the scissor scene.
Have you seen this movie?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my gosh.
You should watch it.
But that's the thing. You don't actually see anything. You see nothing.
Yeah.
But it's implied.
Your mind sees it, though.
And it's like, oh, no.
Anything that can be described as the scissor scene, I want to stay far, far away from.
It's so good. You have to see this movie.
The only thing that could be worse would be something called the tooth pulling scene.
I can think of tooth pulling scenes. Is it safe?
There's yeah. Never mind. I was gonna spoil my list. Sorry, guys.
Okay.
There's another scene in my number three pick. Sorry,
I gotcha. Mm. Well, the scissor scene has nothing to do with the political aspects of this movie, but I mean, it's just icing on the cake, if you will. That will mess
with
your head.
Sure, that's one way to look at it, I'm sure.
Do you know who wrote this? By
wrote the screenplay?
Yeah.
Jeffrey Boehm.
Okay. I for some reason, I thought it was King himself that wrote it.
No, he...
Jeffrey Boehm, who wrote The Phantom.
Oh.
And Lethal Weapon 3.
Oh.
And 2. And Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Wow.
Or at least he's got credits on all of these. Interspace, straight
time. Oh, Interspace. I love that.
That's a great political
movie.
That's
getting in my science movie. my science list.
I can't believe you've never seen The Dead Zone. Christopher Walken is the man in this movie. And Tom Skerritt plays... Okay, so he's in a car accident. He's in a coma for years. He wakes up years later with psychic abilities. So if he touches... Like, if you touch him, he can see your future, basically. And... Tom Skerritt plays a sheriff who reads about him in the paper and invites him to his town to help him solve a murder. And then somehow he ends up, the girl he was engaged to comes to his door one day because she's working on this political campaign, and he touches her he meets Martin Sheen in the process and touches him and sees this future where he is the president and he has lost his mind and he starts World War III and destroys the world. And it's great.
Christopher Walken has always been the man. Even when he was creepy in Annie Hall, he's always been creepy. And which reminds me, have you seen Seven Psychopaths, Brian?
Not yet, no.
You should see it. You have to see it. Walken is especially Walken-y.
Yes.
Isn't it?
That is Walken-iest.
Yeah. But that's a good pick. You got me with that one. I was like, I even searched political horror movies and nothing came up. But you managed to
Google
somehow.
Google was like, I don't know. I got nothing.
It said, ask Adam. It's weird. All right. Well, my number three is from 2005. It's written by one of my favorite writers. And it is Traffic.
Hmm. Okay,
it's a tie, really. I'm gonna tell you the tie. It's Syriana and Traffic. Those both I couldn't pick.
Okay,
I guess Syriana would fit more into this list, but Traffic is also about politics and the way people, you know, we deal with like the drug trafficking, the war on drugs, and I can't pick from those two. Your take on either movie?
I would take Traffic.
Yeah.
I don't think I've actually seen Syriana, to be honest.
But really Traffic, cool.
Traffic is good. I know Traffic got a lot of crap for the whole color correction and, you know.
I love that.
But I love it, too.
That's what I love about it.
The three distinct settings. Stories. So you know exactly instantly. Where you are as soon as you see the color.
So I'll go with Traffic since this is. But Syriana, you've never seen?
No.
I got to lend it to you. It's really good. It's I'll just give you a quick Syriana thing. It's written based off this guy's kind of memoirs, Robert Bayer, I think his name. But in the movie, they changed Clooney's name to Robert Barnes for some weird reason. But it's really cool. It's basically the synopsis is a politically charged epic about the state of the oil industry in the hands of those personally involved and affected by it. So it's just like Traffic, basically, but with like the Middle East and oil fields.
I remember it. I remember when it came out.
Yeah, there's a nail scene. With Clooney, and
see that.
Stop describing scenes in terrible ways.
The nail scene is way worse than the scissor scene
because you see it. You see the nail scene.
Yeah,
but Traffic is also co-written by Steven Gagan and Steve Soderbergh.
Although the nail scene in Syriana and the pepper spray scene in Traffic kind of go together.
Yes, they do.
It's like a weird
refresh my memory with the pepper scene.
It's when after they overthrow. So in the Tijuana story, when Benicio del Toro
captures the assassin who is Clifton Collins Jr., the actor, and he takes him to the Tijuana cartel, and they need information out of him. And the way they torture him is they use pepper spray to the mouth, like into his mouth and into his nose. Like, not, hey, I'm going to spray you from a safe distance. Right. No, I'm going to shoot it up your nose and up your mouth.
And, like, explosive in his face. Not, like, just the spray, but, like, they somehow... Like they hold it under pressure for a certain period of time, and then just let it explode into his face.
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember that scene. Oh, I probably completely repressed it.
For good reason.
Yeah, it sounds awful.
But let's talk about Traffic. I love everything about it. The cinematography, which Steven Soderbergh did himself. This was kind of, like... I love Benicio del Toro from like The Funeral and
Excess Baggage.
Excess Baggage with Alicia Silverstone
Big Top Pee Wee.
Big Top Pee Wee. I didn't know him then, but what's the other movie I'm thinking about? The Usual Suspects.
Yeah,
and this was kind of what was what the fuck? Who's this guy? This guy's amazing. Benicio del Toro plays a. Kind of wanting to do the right thing, cop in Tijuana.
Or wanting to do, not kind of. He wants to do the right thing. The other guy, his partner, is the one who's more iffy about it. Where he thinks he's doing the right thing, but he's doing it the wrong way. Whereas Javier, I think, is doing the right. He's the good guy.
Yeah, and the three stories are it's Javier, Benicio del Toro's story, the cop who's like in the mix of like the cartels, the Juarez cartel and the Tijuana cartel. And then you have Michael Douglas, which is the political side of the movie, where he's a drug czar.
The war on drugs. Yeah.
And I love the scene with him and James Rowland.
Topher Grace in the car, where Topher Grace lays it out for him.
Oh, yeah. That's a good scene, too. But I know the first scene where he gets in, because he's taking over for
James Rowland. And he says, he's like, I'm going to give you the same advice my predecessor gave me. He's like, write two letters. I'm going to leave you two letters. One, you open when the first time you get in trouble, and second, you open the second time you get in trouble. He's like, you open the first letter and it says, blame it on me, you know, blame everything that's happening on me. He's on the second letter, sit down, write two letters. but yeah, there's a lot of some of those amazing scenes. One of my favorite scenes with Benicio del Toro is when he emotionally loses it when he's in his car. And he just like has an emotional breakdown and just walks out of his car.
After he thought he was going to be executed, right?
Yeah. And that scene, in the commentary, they talk about how the wide shot of that, they literally just did it in Traffic. Streets weren't blocked off. He just
stopped his car.
He stopped his car. He had the emotional breakdown in the wide shot. And he just walked out and just left the car there. And then as soon as the scene cuts, they had a grip kind of jump in and move the car.
I remember we did that on your short film. You remember that?
So.
And didn't he win Best Supporting?
He did win Best Supporting. That's a year.
Totally deservedly so.
Yeah.
Did Traffic win?
It did. Best Picture.
Best Picture, yes.
And that year was a year that Soderbergh was nominated twice. And he won for Traffic.
But what was the other one?
The Julia Roberts movie.
Aaron Brockovich.
Aaron Brockovich.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. One of the very
Soderbergh
few times.
Is fucking Soderbergh.
He was Soderbergh versus Soderbergh.
Yeah. If only he had done the Jim Carrey thing like at the MTV Movie Awards. He ran to address himself in the audience.
This is a pretty amazing movie. And then the third story is the guys fighting the war on drugs, which is the DEA with Don Cheadle and
Miguel Ferrer as the guy that they catch. They're so great.
Miguel Ferrer, not all people know, is George Clooney's cousin.
Yeah.
And Luis Guzman. Who's
they're
amazing.
So good together.
Yeah. Don Cheadle and Luis Guzman together.
Clifton Collins is the hitman.
Yeah.
I think this was before he...
This was kind of his breakout role, where he really blew up with this.
Was it? Well, I mean, this was after 187, but I feel like, did he change his name at some point?
Yeah, I think he did. I think in 187 he might have a different name.
Yeah,
but yeah, this and then Tigerland kind of broke him out. But this is definitely one of my favorites. This is I love
this movie. I loved it from the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
I was a little bit disappointed with Sirion. I feel like I need to revisit it now, though. But I just remember not enjoying Sirion as much as I thought I was going to.
It was one of those ones where I was like, oh, it was okay. And then I kept thinking about it day after the days went by, the more I thought about it. And
as far as I'm concerned, technically, if Sirion is on your list, you do have a horror movie because that whole bit with the pool is terrifying to me.
Yes.
There's
yes.
a pool scene, too?
Yeah. With the child.
There's a nail and a pool scene?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm never watching this thing.
Matt Damon's badass in that, too.
He is badass.
Yeah, that speech he gives about the desert, he's like,
I can't remember.
I just remember.
He's like the salesman. Where he's always ready with some quip or some like just sardonic, straight talk.
Yeah, there's this like.
Now I just want to watch Straight Talk with Dolly Parton.
But yeah, that is my number three. Both number threes: Syriana and Traffic. Your number two, Brian.
Well, my number two is Charlie Wilson's War. You told me not to talk about Bullworth, and now we're all out of whack.
Well, that's Bullworth now.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Bullworth now.
Because that's my number two as well.
Oh, okay. All right, there you go.
I took it off my list because you both already talked about how you had it on your list. I do love Bullworth.
So where the hell are we now? Are we talking about Bullworth?
Yeah, number two.
All right. Bullworth is great. I remember watching Bullworth when I was a kid, whenever it first came out, before I had any, adult awareness about the process or the deeper truths of it at all. But just rewatching the bits and pieces of it that I was able to watch, I wasn't able to sit down and rewatch the whole thing, but just...
But quick question before we go on. How old are you?
29.
I want to know how the age difference... Because I remember... Did you see this in theaters?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because I was trying to think, like, then how old am fucking I? I had a weird, like, trippy thing. But yeah, so you did see this in theaters,
and
you just recently kind of revisited.
Yeah, I revisited as much as I could, as much as was available to me. And just like rewatching the scene where he addresses the black church.
Yes.
And they're like, you promised us 2 years ago after the riots that you would have programs. How come that never happened? And he's like, because you don't give money to my campaign. See, what we did is we knew that would be, in the news for a while. So we talked a good game, but we knew you'd forget about it. And you did. So we didn't bother about it.
Are you saying that that you don't care about the black community? He's like, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. and one thing I vividly remember is the television interview he gives where he's like, I guess the solution to all these race problems is we just got to keep fucking each other till we're all the same color. Like, I vividly remember that as a kid, and like, absence the profanity aspect of it, it making total sense as a kid. Just like, yeah, I guess so. Maybe that's because of all the Star Trek I grew up on. It's like, well, we're going to end up fucking each other till we're the same color anyway, I guess. But just what surprised me, at least in rewatching the black church speech scene, was just how surface, not superficially racist, but how just on the surface racist he is for the laughs. He's like, you guys got to put down the malt liquor and the fried chicken long enough to do whatever. And it's like, holy shit. But again, going back to what I was saying before in terms of the thematic juncture, it's another
Well, let's talk about the synopsis before we get into it.
Sure.
For the people who haven't seen it. Basically, Bulworth is kind of the end of his career, end of his life. He's just kind of tired of politics.
He's a California senator. Yeah, he's a California senator. He's like Dianne Feinstein, if that means anything to you. He's a Democratic senator from California. So he's a Democrat, but he's still kind of bought and paid for by a big corporate interest. Yeah.
Well, he started off when he first got into office. He was really like had all these ideals, and he kind of basically sold his soul to all these special interests.
Yeah.
And he just wants to leave his daughter money. So because he did all these things for the insurance companies, they give him a $10 million life insurance policy. And he can't commit suicide, so he gets a hitman. He hires a hitman, and he says, I don't want to know when you kill me, but you have 2 days to kill me. And so he goes about his day, and he's kind of going out to on this campaign to get reelected.
Yeah, but his heart's not in it.
Yeah, his heart's not in it. And he gets drunk, and he has that. That's the first stop, which is the black congregation, the African-American congregation. And then he goes – he realizes, like, fuck it, I'm going to die anyway. So he just goes nuts.
I'm just going to tell the truth.
Yeah, he tells the truth, and Oliver Platt is in his –
he's his press secretary.
It's Oliver Platt, and again, coming at something, you know, however many years later and not recognizing all of these people the first time around. But then it's like, holy shit, it's Oliver Platt and Josh Molina in this political movie. It's like, what are you guys doing here? Get back on the West Wing.
Yep.
So he basically hires a hitman to take himself out. And once he realizes, you know, he thinks about it for a second. He's like, well, I'm a dead man anyway, so I might as well tell the truth and do what I actually have been wanting to do all these years. And so he starts doing that, and it obviously causes a huge ruckus, and he finds his will to live, of course, and then has to deal with that aspect of it. But
well, then he's enticed by Halle Berry.
He's also enticed by Halle Berry. Halle Berry's big breakout role. Yeah. And I would have to watch more of it because I don't really like Halle Berry.
I feel like I got an
in the movie or in general.
In her roles, at least in. And this is why I'm saying this is why I need to watch more of her in Bulworth, because I feel like these days she's very much, I'm an actor and I must act hard so you see how hard and how good of an actress I am.
To show you why I have an Oscar.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I deserve this.
I deserve this Oscar, so I will act hard. But I need to revisit, you know, Bulworth, which is her big breakout role, and see if she actually was a good actress at the time before she kind of got that Oscar disease.
Yeah.
It's another one example of kind of flipping the script on the cynicism idealism, and again it's approaching it just from a different angle of giving somebody within the process the excuse to tell the truth as we all not involved in the process generally see it, and just tell the truth and actually like work towards real solutions that exist within our society. And doing it in a much more provocative way than a movie like Dave does. Because, you know, he says all these intentionally provocative things. Like, we got to fuck each other till we're the same color. Yeah. And you got to put down the fried chicken and the malt liquor and all of this. And it's making up this list. One thing that I found was interesting was,
you're kind of racist?
No. No. I thought about it. I gave the question genuine consideration.
You know that's the worst thing you could say to a Caucasian person?
What's that? That you're racist?
Yeah.
That they're racist?
Because that'll offend somebody to no end. That is the worst thing you could say to a white person, honestly.
That they're a racist?
Yeah.
I could see that. Certain like, white people.
You could drop the N-word and it's just racist. You calling a white person racist will get you the same shock look. Like, what?
Racist? I'm not a racist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll try it one day.
I don't think it works if another white person calls a white person racist. I think it's more offensive. Oh,
yeah. If a black person is called. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the flip of if you're a white person, you call a black person the N-word. Yeah. You're like, although you're probably more likely to get the crap beaten out of you if you do that versus if
you're being racist, dude.
Yeah.
I know a lot of black dudes that can't fight.
Wait, is that racist or is that anti-racist?
that's the opposite of racism.
I was at a party last week and I ended up in this conversation with this people our age, two girls, one black, one white, that were friends there together. And the black girl was saying that she was a conservative, but she didn't know if she was going to vote for Romney or not. And I expressed genuine surprise. I was like, you're young, you're our age, you're black, and you're a woman, and you're conservative. Oh, that's interesting. And her white friend, who was smoking a cigarette leaning up against the wall, was like, well, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, it's just statistically unlikely. That's that's all. It's like, what are you trying to nail me on in terms of this, you know?
It's like it's
what
like,
we're allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say, which is very much like Bulworth. Like, and I didn't take the bait. Like, I suppose I should have been like, oh, I didn't mean it. Anybody can be whatever they want and believe whatever they want. But that's that's not what it was. And I didn't fall into that trap. It was like, no, it's just if you look at the actual odds, that's an unlikely thing to encounter. That's all I meant.
Just I freak out when young people are like really like hardcore, like. Conservatives. Is anybody in their 20s like that's really like conservative? I'm like,
it's well. See, I went to a very conservative college. Most of the people, you know, most of my population, and I went there during the whole Iraq War and 2004 re-election and all that.
I feel if you're conservative, right. If you're in your 20s and conservative, you have sexual tension in you. That's a problem.
Well, just because you're politically conservative doesn't necessarily mean that you're sexually conservative.
That's true as well. Yeah.
All right.
The church group that I went to when I was in middle school could attest to that.
But,
but there is something very unsettling, off-putting about young, hardcore conservatives, especially like neocon conservatives, you know, like people that were like really, you know, rah-rah Iraq War at the time during the invasion. It's like, you guys, you just don't get it, do you?
You're talking about this. I'm just thinking about the Church of the Light from True Blood and all you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So back to Bulworth real quick.
Bulworth.
And it just the movie's really, really funny.
Yeah, it's very bitingly. It's great comedy is stuff that has some really biting hard truth to it.
Yeah.
And Bulworth is one of the finest examples of that because he says things that are just you go, oh, that just it just makes you wince in that way because you know there's a very uncomfortable truth at the center of it.
Yeah. I'm sad that Warren Beatty isn't making movies. I don't know what happened. I don't know.
He did Town and Country.
I guess so. But still, like I really want to see the Kill Bill version with Warren Beatty as Bill. That was the original cast.
That would be great.
Yeah. I don't know.
What is Warren Beatty doing these days?
He retired.
He's owning, just hanging out?
Yeah.
I did see him at the Hero Complex Film Festival a couple years ago. They showed Dick Tracy.
Oh, nice.
And so he did a Q&A. And it was a really insightful Q&A, actually. He had a lot of really great things to say.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would love to see him do more movies.
Me too.
I think you're going to be waiting for a while.
Nope. Yeah, nothing planned, right? Yeah.
Last thing he was in was Town and Country. It was 2001, unless you count this Dick Tracy special thing in 2010.
No.
The last actual movie was 11 years ago.
That bastard. He needs to make more movies. All right. Well, that is from... What year was that, by the way?
98.
All right.
It was that late?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot earlier than that.
No.
Wow.
Ghetto Superstar.
Yeah.
Because that had to come after the Fugees, the score.
See, I don't really remember Ghetto Superstar. I remember Insane in the Membrane.
Okay.
When he's driving down the street.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was Brian and I's number two. Adam, what's your number two?
My number two, just to throw you for a loop, is from 2002, and it's Gangs of New York.
Ooh.
Just because it has
old-timey,
the best reaction to an election that didn't go someone's way ever.
Yeah.
Cleaver to the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one has ever been that upset with an election as Bill the Butcher.
Oh, he was pissed.
He was very, very pissed.
Yeah. I love this movie, yet it's flawed. It's flawed.
It's very flawed.
But
it's very flawed for this movie, but there are worse movies that it's a weird like double.
It's a very ambitious movie, and it's like it's when you're trying to fire on that many cylinders, it's obviously a lot harder to fire on all of them.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like a movie should get points for ambition.
Oh yeah.
So if you have 20 cylinders to your movie and you're like, yeah, say you get 16 or 17 of them, and your standard movie is, a V6 or whatever. It's, but
You clearly don't know shit about cars, bro.
I clearly don't. I realized halfway down that analogy, I was like, oh, this is not good.
It's funny because he started with the car fence, and I'm like, Brian doesn't know shit about cars. I'm going to see where this
goes. So when you fire on all cylinders, and then in the seventh inning stretch, the goalie... Yeah, something has gone terribly
wrong. And then you filibuster.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
When it's not
I'm surprised.
He's like, when a car is not naturally aspirated.
See, I don't even know what the hell that means. I'm surprised, speaking of filibuster, that Mr. Smith Goes Washington isn't on anybody's list.
But not to number one yet.
Yeah. I took out, like, well, I won't say what I left out all the usual suspects. Like,
yeah,
always.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the movie, though, but like,
that's my favorite political movie.
All the President's Men and all that stuff.
Anyway, my point is, you know, if a movie is very ambitious and there are certain things that it doesn't quite land, it should still get points for that ambition if it gets most of them right.
That makes sense. I don't know that I could agree with that.
Because
what comes to mind when talking of a movie that is clearly ambitious that doesn't necessarily reach everything is Cloud Atlas, and fuck that movie.
Oh, okay.
I love Cloud Atlas.
I still need to see Cloud Atlas. Right. So,
Whereas this movie, which does have problems and it kind of falters a little bit, but I would still gladly sit through Gangs of New York, yes. If only because of Daniel Day-Lewis just being awesome.
And two things about this movie: one, it would have made a way better HBO miniseries now than it would a movie. It would benefit from, you know, HBO miniseries, like a 8-episode, because then you have a little more time to kind of develop all that stuff you want to develop. But two, this movie should be on a list. We should do this list eventually where an actor saves a movie.
Okay.
Because Daniel Lewis saved this movie, this movie for me. I could watch it over and over because of him.
Yeah.
He is amazing in this, especially the speech when DiCaprio's in bed.
Yeah. The beginning of the second disc.
Yes.
He's draped in the American flag.
Yep.
But that's like, oh, that's just, it's weird, like, looking, like, I can't wait to change this because I know what the first scene is.
Yes. Sometimes I would just start with that scene. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go straight to that scene because it's amazing.
Well, I remember once I accidentally put the second disc in first. It's like, whatever, I'm here.
Yeah.
I don't know how it got here, but this is the choice we've made.
Yep.
We've arrived at this point.
But anyway, to the election part of the movie, which is why it is on this list. I think most of my movies just kind of deal with the absurdity of politics and elections. Like in Distinguished Gentleman, he gets elected because he has the same name. In Dave, he looks like the president.
Yeah.
In The Dead Zone, he's this evil person who just kind of sneaks his way into the office, and then that's when you find out who he really is. And then in Gangs in New York, you've got this gang trying to like rig the election and just pulling drunks off the street and sending them to vote, and then taking them out and then shaving them and sending them back in to vote again. And just the way they're trying to take this vote is crazy. And then when they lose and Brian Gleason becomes I don't even remember what office he was running for.
Yeah.
Brendan Gleason.
Yeah.
And he just kills him.
Yep.
In the middle of the street, and nobody does anything.
Nope.
And it's,
and that's how
chilling
it goes sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so good.
Bill the Butcher is amazing.
Bill the Butcher.
One of my favorite characters on film.
Yeah.
With the crazy mustache and the top hat.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, I was like, should I get a top hat, dude? But then my friend's like, no, you look like a douchebag, dude. All right. But now I do own a top hat. As an adult, I've you know what? I don't care if I look like a douchebag. I'm going to wear a top hat.
But it's not quite a stovepipe hat.
No, it's definitely
not beaver skin, I'm guessing.
No. So it's a faux top hat.
Faux top hat.
Yeah. All right. My number two was Bullworth. So give us a little recap, Brian. And then your number one.
A recap of where we are
picks.
Now? No. Okay. Let me pull it up again. Wag the Dog at number 5. Election at number 4. A tie between Dave and Bullworth at number 3 for me. Charlie Wilson's War at number 2 for me. And then I'm actually just thinking about my number one, about basically what you guys are saying about The Usual Suspects. So maybe we'll get into that a little bit, depending on what your guys' number one is.
Okay, so you want to skip your number one till we go? Because it's your turn.
Yeah, yeah, let's do that.
Okay, Adam.
Ooh, that's a List Film Podcast first.
Yeah.
Oh, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's...
It's
a lot.
You're the guest. You choose. Anyone gets, oh, okay. gets to skip your
choose
turn.
Choose your own adventure.
All right, so my number one...
Turn to page 27.
Skip a turn.
Also, I don't know why... I mean, if anything, this is the movie you should have known as far as political and horror. The Manchurian Candidate.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
The first real great conspiracy.
Denzel Washington,
Yes. It's terrifying. Terrifying that they remade the Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, what Lawrence Harvey is just chilling in this movie. If you haven't seen the Manchurian Candidate, I don't know what to tell you. You should go see it. You should pause this and go see it because I'm about to spoil it.
Yep.
Okay. Did you pause it? Are you back now?
I paused.
Do you know what happened? Okay. Yeah. Good. So, the scene in the Manchurian Candidate. Where Lawrence Harvey is like activate. Okay, so I guess I have to explain it first. So there is a military group in what, the Korean? Is it the Korean War?
I think yeah, they're Korean War. Yep. Yeah.
And they're captured by the Chinese communists and they're brainwashed and sent back. And one of them, Lawrence Harvey, is a sleeper who is. They're trying to get him to take over the presidency as a communist sleeper, sleeper agent, or whatever you want to call it. And so when they finally activate him at one point after they've come back from the war, they have him kill. His fiance to be and her father by this river, and it's just terrifying because you're seeing it from their point of view. I believe it's Janet Leigh as the girlfriend, and you're seeing from their point of view, and they don't know what's wrong. Like, but you know, it's that whole tension where you know what's really happening, but the character isn't aware of it yet. And watching as Lawrence Harvey approaches them, and you're just like, you guys need to run away. He's gonna kill you, and just drowning them in the lake the way he does. It's chilling and unsettling, and it's weird to say that it's great, but it is. It's a really well put together scene, and the way the tension and how scary it is. And then Frank Sinatra's character, he's like the captain of the unit that Lawrence Harvey was in that was captured, and he's kind of realizing that they were all brainwashed and trying to stop him. And it's just a great political thriller. It's about an election, and again the links that parties or governments will go to control people in general, and in this case it's communists trying to control America, but still same just the weird ways that politics warps people really.
I've heard horror stories. I was just looking up what year it came out because I heard horror stories about Frank Sinatra. By the way, the Manchurian Candidate and my number five, both directed by John Frankenheimer.
Yes.
My tie for number five was 7 Days in May and Your Manchurian Candidate, both directed by John Frankenheimer, and my movie, written by Rod Serling.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Manchurian Candidate has always felt... Yeah.
Not Manchurian Candidate, but my movie.
Oh, okay.
Seven Days in May. Yeah, so you should check that out.
When the hell was... Did he write that before, after Twilight Zone?
Before, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Or it may have been during...
Because if he wrote it during, that's insane.
Yeah. Also because... He was always he wrote Planet of the Apes. He's always kind of had that. That's why Planet of the Apes is one of my favorite movies because it's giant. It's a really long Twilight Zone episode.
Well, from the very beginning it starts off. It's like that episode. Oh, what's that? The episode of Twilight Zone where it's the three astronauts who see the crash spaceship and it turns out that it's them.
Yeah.
And it's like purgatory.
Yeah, and it just
it's like the
it
movie Triangle, but in the Twilight Zone.
It's just a really long episode of Twilight Zone.
Who is the actor? He was in The Odd Couple, the TV show.
I don't know. But let me tell the story while you figure
Jack
that
Klugman.
Out. Oh, yes. Frank Sinatra was at his time when he was doing Manchurian Candidate, had already kind of like done like Ocean's 11. He already was like a big shot. And Frank only did one take. And that's the way you got to roll with it. And people told John Frankenheimer, don't hire Frank because he only does one take. And he's like, no, he's right for the part. I got to hire him. And that, you know, he was good. He's really good.
He's damn good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
but all of those takes are one take.
It's weird to me that this one deals with assassination, because suddenly also deals with assassination. And Frank Sinatra notoriously went around Hollywood trying to buy up all the copies of that print after Kennedy was assassinated. But I don't know that he did the same thing with Manchurian Candidate. Maybe because he's not the assassin in this one.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
Sinatra's a weird dude.
Yeah.
Very weird dude.
I love Sinatra. But it's kind of sketchy.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had some sketchy stuff in his in his past, or not even his past, his life.
Oh yeah,
the meat of his life.
Yeah.
Angela Lansbury is great in this movie. Very very chilling. Also
yes. and the remake, not so good.
Not so good.
Yeah.
I didn't see the remake.
Yeah, don't. We're good.
All right.
Yeah, you're a better man for it.
All right.
All right. I'll get to my recap. 7 Days in May and Wife of the Dog, tie for number 5. Frost Nixon, number 4. Syriana and Traffic, tie for number 3. Bullworth, number 2. And my number 1 is from 2000. And I remember seeing this and just being blown away. Not only by the acting, but just like how... like how sharp the dialogue was for me, this movie. And I'm talking about 2000's The Contender. Do you remember that?
I didn't see it.
Oh,
Joan Allen.
Joan Allen, Jeff Bridges as a president, and Gary Oldman as
Gary Oldman is...
like, I forgot what he is. I haven't seen this.
Creepy.
He's creepy.
He's Gary fucking way. Oldman.
He's like, I'll give you the gist of it. The vice president has passed away. And Jeff Bridges is the president, and he has to appoint a vice president. He's already in office, and he appoints a woman, which is Joan Allen. And now I forgot who has to approve her.
The Senate.
Yeah, the Senate. Yeah. And there's a senator, I guess, and which is Gary Oldman, and he finds like there's a, like sex tape of her, and political scandal movie, and he's basically trying to take her down. Like he doesn't want her. And he's like a hardcore Republican, of course. And he's the scariest. Of course, Gary Oldman always transforms for most of his roles. And for this, he's amazing. He's got a southern accent. And one of the most chilling lines in that movie that I always think about is when he says, "We both have our guns pointed at each other. Only mines are loaded." And
I love the tagline for this movie. Yeah. Sometimes you can assassinate someone or assassinate a leader without firing a shot.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good tagline.
Yeah. And
it was always creepy. Just the trailer for me was creepy.
Oh yeah.
And just like, oh, you know this isn't gonna go well for someone. Like this, something bad is happening in this movie.
Yeah. And it was written and directed by this director called Rudd Lurie. And he has done He does well in political stuff. He did 2008's Nothing But the Truth, which not a lot of people saw, but it was another political movie that's really really well done. It had Matt Dillon.
That's Matt Dillon. The Valerie Plame. That was the same time as
Keep
the one
Sale.
With Fair. I want to say Fair Game. They came out around the same time. The one with
about the Valerie Plame scandal.
Yeah,
but one of them was more fictionalized than the other. I think Rod Lurie's one was more fictionalized.
Yes, it was. But in certain ways, I really enjoyed it. And I mean, I like it's history, but he did. I like his version better. That's all I'm going to say. Check it out for yourself. There's something about what he brought to it that I enjoyed a little better than Fair Game.
And he did The Last Castle.
Yes, yeah.
I enjoyed The Last Castle.
He wrote and directed the new version of Straw Dogs.
Yeah,
which I haven't seen, so.
It's not terrible, but it's not Peckinpah.
Yeah, okay.
Deterrence. He did Deterrence, which I really like. Kevin
Pollak. Yes, yeah.
Mm. Kevin Pollak is amazing, especially in political type movies.
Yeah, when you throw him in there as a straight man, but he still just like makes it funny. Like he brings his Pollakness to it, and he's great.
And let me just rattle off some names of the cast of The Contender. So we got Gary Oldman, Joan Allen, Jeff Bridges, Christian Slater. That's the only little red mark. It was good in it, but
I like Christian Slater. Yeah.
Sam Elliott, William Peterson, Saul Rubinek,
ooh,
Philip Baker Hall, Mike Binder. That's all about you need to know. It's just amazing, great cast, and the scenes with like the little like intimate scenes when Jeff Bridges is talking to Joan Allen about whether she did or didn't do it, and like her response to it. The question is whether it's Joan Allen in the tape, because it's kind of blurry and you can't really see her face, and it's like her in kind of like this group sex thing, and you can't really tell, but like Jeff Bridges kind of drills her on it, and it's just this intimate scene and like in the lawn right outside the White House, and it's really really it's a really really well done scene. The whole movie is amazing.
Do they have the outside of the White House built somewhere for filming?
They must.
They must.
They use it for, like, for the West Wing. I feel like there's one.
Well, they have. I mean, maybe they don't have it anymore. Obviously, they had one for a long time for the Oval Office mm-hmm. built for the West Wing. Yeah. And, you know, obviously the Oval Office comes up in enough movies that...
Yeah, I think we still do.
Like but like, you know, the Rose Garden, is the Rose Garden a standing set somewhere?
It's got to be. Well, it's just like that, the plane crash scene from War of the Worlds is still there.
It's still on the back
still
lot.
People
yeah.
use it for
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
For like disaster movies, period. Yeah. Yeah, I know there's a movie coming out this next year called White House Down, and they do a lot of exteriors and stuff, so they have to have that set somewhere.
Yeah. And all the times that the Hill Valley Courthouse appears in things.
Yeah.
Especially in old TV.
Yeah.
Like the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Like the first episode of the Twilight Zone, it's a guy, it's like so many episodes of the Twilight Zone, a guy who comes back and everyone's gone.
Yeah.
And I believe he's running through it's the always, town square of Hill Valley.
Yeah. So, again, my number one, The Contender. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Brian, I think you'd like this movie.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds intriguing. I definitely am.
Yeah.
Going to check that one out. All right. So I just thought of this other one in the course of this podcast, but should I give you my obvious choice or my non-obvious choice?
Give us your non-obvious and then give your other choice as an honorable mention.
Okay. So my non-obvious is Street Fight, which is actually a documentary about Cory Booker, who is the current mayor of Newark, and his first...
I already like this pick better. I haven't heard this ever.
It's a documentary and it's amazing. It's about Cory Booker, who is a young... guy living in Newark. I forget what office, if any, he held beforehand, but him running for mayor of Newark, New Jersey, against this really old, entrenched, corrupt, old school, you know, political machine mayor. And Newark is a very, you know, black town, heavy African American population, very poor, you know, very corrupt and high murder rate and all of that.
Well, they have the white flight.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, one of those kind of cities, much like Detroit or anywhere else, where, you know, it used to be in the 50s, it used to be a city of industry, and then you had the white flight, and now it's, you know, very low income. And it's all about this, you know, this guy who's a reformer trying to come in and battle and defeat this this very entrenched old school way of doing things. And it's an amazing documentary. Sort of spoiler, sort of not, he is currently the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, and he's... He's an amazing, if you actually follow him on Twitter, especially now, you know, we're recording this in the aftermath of Hurricane Superstorm Sandy. And it's like he will interact with his Twitter followers in this incredibly direct way. Like people will shout at him on Twitter like, hey, we don't have power or there's a pothole. What's and like he literally made news. I think it was at the beginning. No, it wouldn't have been Sandy. It would have been the big blizzard earlier in the year, I think, where... somebody tweeted at him like, yeah, my grandpa is stuck in his house and the driveway is all covered up in snow and nobody's coming by to shovel it. So he literally went down himself and started shoveling it. And there's another story where he literally, and I swear to God this is true, he literally ran into a burning building to save a woman.
I know this dude. I just saw this dude in the news.
He was just on the Colbert Report a few weeks, the other week, because he's starting, he has this startup of...
He's African American, right?
Yeah, he's an African American guy. Yeah.
Is this on Netflix? Or I feel like I saw it on Netflix. Maybe I missed it. But
I saw it on the news. Like literally, this dude just ran in. He was like running, like jogging, and this building was on fire. And he's like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna go inside."
Right now, but
he just fucking ran in.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's from 2005. I think the documentary is. But he's, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, the people who get into politics for, you know, self entitlement or glory to win the game. And how that sort of self-disqualifies you. Anybody who wants to run for higher office is probably the person who should not have public higher office. And this guy is a great example of that in the sense that you see the kind of guy this guy is. And you're like, no, run for governor and then run for president and be the president. But he's not. And certainly he's had the opportunity. Certainly people have come to him. He's spoken at the DNC, you know, been a big speaker at the DNC. At least in 2012, if not in 2008 as well. Certainly people have come to him and said, yes, run for Senate and run for governor or whatever, and then run for president. And he must have, because this is the kind of guy that he seems to genuinely be, of, no, Newark is the city I'm from, it's the city I care about, and this is my job, mm-hmm. so I'm going to worry about Newark for right now. Anyway, Street Fight is a documentary that's, shows the process of that kind of guy running against and trying to change the system that we're all very familiar with, the corrupt system of, you know, machine politics and kickbacks and bribes and just the good old boy network in a very, you know, in a specific form. The other thing about, you know, because New York is a large African American and low income and all of that, and so it's the actual players are different, but the game is essentially the same, whether it's, you know, this, you know, African American, you know, low income world, or if it's the incredibly rich white WASP, you know, Mitt Romney world. It's the same basic thing. It's okay, I've got mine, and I've got my friends, and my friends and I are all, we've got the game rigged for ourselves, and we're just in it to enrich ourselves. It's the same basic game, regardless of the actual arena changing. And it's just, it's an amazing documentary about, you know, the nuts and bolts of this guy coming in and trying to change it. So that's my ultimate recommendation, my strongest recommendation of, here's something you probably haven't seen and you should run out and try to watch it.
I want to watch it right now. That sounds like a great pick. And I'm glad, I mean, I know what your other pick was, and I do like that movie too. And I agree with it, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it eventually.
Yeah.
But I do really want to see Street Fight right now.
Yeah. Street Fight is great.
By the way, for it those goes out, sorry, out there, don't be careful how you type in this movie, because if you type in Street Fighter, you will get a Van Damme movie or a Sonny Chiba movie, which is rated X for violence.
Oh.
So
also very good and not quite as insightful about the political process.
I mean, dictatorship.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, certain different forms of political systems. Take over.
Raul Julia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Force. Raul Julia was in that.
That's his last little bad mark. Movie. On
His last movie.
And you know, it teased it. If you watch it, it's one of those first movies, first movies that started the after credit, what is it called? Little, like...
The Stinger.
Stinger, yeah. Where you see Raul Julia punch out through the TV sets.
Well, I mean...
And you're like, whoa, my God, what Street Fighter 2?
Masters of the Universe had that, too.
Did they?
Yeah.
I gotta
Skeletor
see this.
At the end of the
credits.
Oh,
you're right.
You're right. I feel like... okay, we'll see. Now we're just going cheesy.
Yeah.
Cheesy 80s action, but whatchamacallit has that, too. Flash Gordon.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, Ming the Merciless at the end. Like, he picks the ring back up or whatever.
Isn't there something in one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that's that as well? Or am I completely
making
that up?
That one's not after the credits. That one's kind of like a jokey, like, sort of... At the end of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, his hand pops out.
Yeah.
And then he dies.
Yeah.
But it's like, and then it falls down.
Yeah.
See, that's great. That's the kind of joke somebody should do now. But they were doing it in, like, 1988 or whatever it was.
I always want to see... No matter what movie I've seen since the Avengers or Thor or Iron Man, I always want to see Sam Jackson just pop out. You know,
I want to do that. I feel like this would be a great College Humor or Funny or Die sketch where you just show Sam Jackson showing up to every other franchise. Like, he shows up and he recruits Batman.
Okay,
and then he shows up and he recruits Joseph Gordon-Levitt from Looper.
I'll delete this part of the podcast. But how about you do a spoof where? It's the end of Lincoln.
He shows up and he recruits Lincoln.
Time travel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just like having him show up and recruit everybody. And it's like,
and then they go fight.
It's part of the Avengers initiative.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about some honorable mentions.
So I think we should begin the honorable mentions with what was your other number one.
Okay. So my obvious choice, my usual suspect, is The American President.
I love The American President.
To not have Sorkin at the top of the list or close to the top of the list just seems crazy to me. You know, The American President is proto West Wing. It is, it's sort of the backdoor pilot of the West Wing in a weird way.
It reminds me of the West Wing so much that, so between The American President and the West Wing and Spin City, I always feel like Michael J. Fox is in the West Wing when he's not.
He's not, no.
Because of Spin City and The American President.
But the West Wing is such a parade for actors in every other sense.
Yeah.
You know, just everybody who's been in everything comes through as the ambassador from somewhere at some point. What's the name of the guy that plays Lord John Marbury? You know, that guy. There's Oliver Platt, John Larroquette. Mullaram from Temple of Doom plays an ambassador at one point, which is amazing.
Everyone's just covering their chest when he walks by. Well, touch me.
There's one scene where I guess he's going back and forth with Allison Janney and CJ Craig at one point, and, you know, they're... You know, we need you to do this, and no, you need this. And at some point, Allison Janney like tells him to do something, and I really just wanted him to come back and say, "You want a position unsuitable to give orders," but he does. But he doesn't do it, and that made me very sad. And now he's dead, so you'll never be able to make that joke again.
Hmm. That sucks.
Yeah. These are the kind of things that are very important to me.
And the American president, Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner, Aaron Sorkin, Mike Douglas, Martin Sheen.
Mike Douglas.
Mike Douglas.
The Mike Douglas show.
Yeah.
Michael Douglas, who's Michael also Douglas. In Traffic.
Yeah. Who else is that? Josh Molina,
right?
Annette
Bening.
Annette Bening, of course, yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss.
Who reminds me of... Well, because he played him later, but when they were making W, and they said Richard Dreyfuss was playing Dick Cheney, I just kept thinking about him
in
the American President.
Yeah.
And Martin Sheen is in this one, but Michael J. Fox was... I mean, he's Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
Samantha Mathis.
Yeah.
David Paymer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just love... The bit where he's constantly trying to buy flowers and he can't buy flowers and then he realizes that he has a rose garden.
So this is from what year is this?
96, I want to say.
95.
This is a post Few Good Men, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Few Good Men is, I want to say, 92.
Yeah.
93. But yeah, I mean, the speech he gives, it's such a... Again, it's another like wish fulfillment of why can't our politicians actually do this? And occasionally they do, but just these great moments. You know, obviously, his speech that he gives in the press room, you know, because Richard Dreyfuss is playing his Republican challenger for re-election. You know, Bob Munson, I think, is the character's
name.
That
sounds right.
Bob Munson. My name is Bob Munson, and I'm running for president. And he's making all these petty attacks and negative campaigning that we all hate in our process. And
when
finally,
he starts attacking Annette Bening for being at a demonstration where she burns a flag.
Yeah. And then Michael Douglas gets up there and gives his amazing speech, which he ends with the greatest drop the mic line. One of the greatest drop the mic lines in all movie. Or, my name is whatever his name is the president. But my name is and I am the president of the United States.
Andrew Shepherd.
Andrew Shepherd. Thank you. My name is Andrew Shepherd and I am the president of the United States. Just awesome.
Anything else on your list of
honorable mentions? We mentioned briefly Dr. Strangelove. Also, I found, and I would highly agree with this, although I wouldn't have thought of it myself, Downfall.
Yes.
Which is just an amazing accomplishment of a film when you really look at it. Because Downfall is about the last days of Adolf Hitler and the collapse of the Third Reich and basically the end of the war and leading up to him and the remaining the vestiges of the Third Reich locked in the bunker in the last days. And it manages to take, the closest real life has to a one-dimensional villain of all time, Adolf Hitler, and show the humanity behind him and show him as a human being, which was a big deal. I mean, a lot of people weren't okay with that in Germany when the movie came out. I think it's 2004.
A lot of guilt.
They still got some shit to deal with, and not without justification. But
take that aside. It's just a good. It's a good film.
Yeah, it's a great film. Yeah. But it's that accomplishment of taking this this guy that we all know as this ultimate villain, and showing any shred of humanity in him whatsoever, and just showing him as a human being. Is amazing, and then contrasted that against Goebbels, and showing the complete lack of humanity. Like this, that girl is just a fucking robot. That guy was just like the weirdest, creepiest, uncanny valley of humanity was that guy, and the environment. I guess the situation, just a very unique situation. And of course, if you've ever seen. The internet.
Hitler hates iPhone 5.
Yeah. You've seen how honestly, Hitler feels about Burning Man, iPhone 5.
I've just seen that scene over and over again. I still haven't seen this movie.
Oh,
I feel really bad about it. I've seen him complain about the Balloon Boy.
It starts,
I've seen him complain about the endings of movies.
Downfall, it stars Bruno Ganz as Adolf Hitler. And if you don't know who Bruno Ganz is, he's does an amazing job in this movie called Wings of Desire, which is... what City of Angels is based off of.
Which is really weird to say because City of Angels is...
A shitty fucking movie.
Just especially compared to Wings of Desire.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Wings of Desire is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check that out and check Downfall out.
Check it. And I will admit, because I only watched Downfall after that internet meme became a
thing. Really?
Yeah. So it was very hard to actually see, even though you knew the context, you could obviously always tell the context of, oh, it, you know, army troop movements. And that's all the actual scene really is, oh, the troops will move this way and the 3rd Division will come to the rescue. It's like, well, no, Mein Führer, the 3rd Division has been wiped out. And that's when he has his...
Everyone leave the room.
Yeah, that's when he has his breakdown. Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to pull. But still, like, everything surrounding it is totally worth... And that scene, if you can strip the context of the internet pop culture from it and forget that thing exists, is also an amazing scene. But even if you can't and that scene is ruined for you, the rest of the movie is absolutely worth it.
As many times as I've seen the scene, I don't think it could be ruined for me.
No, it's a good movie, period.
The acting in the scene is clearly good regardless of what someone has changed the subtitles
to. It's kind of like the thing where it's like the more serious something is, the funnier it is. And that scene is so fucking serious.
Yeah, that's
so good.
It's like the Ben Kingsley of scenes.
Exactly. Exactly.
If Ben Kingsley were a scene,
it would be the
downfall scene. But check that out. Downfall, Bruno Gantz. Yeah. I want to see more Bruno Gantz in movies. Your honorable mentions, Adam.
See, I had a bunch of honorable mentions, but I was just like, things I want to save for other lists, but I'll talk about them briefly. 1994's Speechless.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Keaton and Gina Davis play dueling speechwriters on opposite sides of the campaign.
Mm.
I just love when he comes up with the friendship ditch for their immigration. Trying to like make it a good thing. And then, again, I almost had a walk-in double feature with 1995's Nick of Time.
Ooh.
Johnny Depp, he walk-in kidnaps his daughter and tries to get him to kill a senator. Black Sheep.
Yes. That's a good
1996 comedy. Also. Then Bananas. Woody Allen becomes the Fidel Castro type.
Yep.
And then Being There, which I believe Brian Lally had on his list of our random
topics. Yeah.
And then I love this movie, but I don't remember it dealing with an election. I was laughing so hard that I don't entirely remember what it is actually even about. I was just laughing the whole time.
Okay.
And that's In the Loop.
Yep. I have it. I was going to mention that. In the Loop.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Don't say anything about it. Just go see it.
Yeah, just go see it.
It's I think it's a better watch if you just don't know anything about it. Have you seen this, Brian?
That's the line. I haven't seen it.
Difficult, lemony, difficult.
I think it might be streaming, too.
Yeah, I believe it is. I believe it just came on streaming recently. And then also The American President. And then a movie that I feel like would go very well with Street Fight, but a very different look at the political process, Journeys with George.
Okay.
Especially if you're a liberal person, this movie kind of explains to you, it's like, oh, I understand part of why George W. Bush became president of the United States. Because you like it's a weird, just hang, Alexandra Pelosi was basically in the press corps with him on his tour, on his, what, election tour or whatever, when he was going up against Kerry. And just seeing his interactions and seeing like, yes, he's clumsy and he's not well-spoken, but you see the whole everyman aspect to it and how that just like how that sucks people in.
Like baseball.
Yeah, well, it's like at the end of the movie, you're like, I would have an alcohol-free beer with George W. Bush.
Yes.
I've heard that a lot, and I can see that. I've always been able to.
I would still now. I'd party with him.
I would definitely do it now, actually.
You know he loves cocaine.
First of all, and the Rangers.
Yeah, and the Rangers. By the way, if you're a fan of Veep on Showtime, it is written by the creators of In the Loop. So,
and then what was the name of the show that In the Loop was? Because In the Loop was a show.
It's a British show, I think. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe one of our listeners will know. The Loop is based off of a British show, and then In the Loop kind of became Veep. Loosely. But is there anything more on your list?
I had All the President's Men.
Yeah.
And then, I mean...
The Candidate?
I didn't realize Kevin wasn't going to be here today. I kind of assumed that he would have some of the movies that I wasn't going to have.
Yeah.
I figured him for a Mr. Smith Goes to Washington type.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so Mr. Smith didn't end up on anybody's list.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting.
No. Well, I think that'd be Kevin's default, so...
Okay.
He was supposed to be here. Couldn't make it. I'll go Bananas as well. In the Loop, Election, all the ones you guys have mentioned, but one you didn't mention, I'm a big fan of, just because I'm a fan of this man, even though he's a Republican, Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
Absolute Power.
Yeah.
Master Thief.
I thought about Absolute Power, actually. Yeah. I didn't end up putting it on there, but yeah.
A career thief witnesses a horrific crime involving the U.S. president, which is played by Gene Hackman. And then he's got you got Ed Harris, Laura Linney, Scott Glenn, Dennis Haysbert, Judy Davis.
Written by William Goldman.
Written by William Goldman. Yeah, that's what I was just going to mention. And it's a really good kind of like political thriller.
Another one about
scandal,
scandal and corruption, yeah. An aspect of it, of people holding on to power for power's sake.
Yeah. Gene Hackman is in a lot of those type of like roles. He used to be, and then he kind of didn't like that anymore. Like in The Firm and stuff like that. But anyway.
Superman,
yeah.
Very political film.
Very political film.
All about real estate.
Yeah. It's at its core, it's about real estate.
Those land grabs.
Yeah.
Those land grabs.
Yeah. It's basically the story of Turner.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
And Disney, Walt Disney.
Yeah.
And the TV show that In the Loop was based on is The Thick of It.
Oh, okay.
Do I have anything else? I think that might have been it.
Well, let's wrap it up. Find us on Facebook and what's it called? Twitter at The Film Podcast. You could find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERAS.
I'm at An Adam Scott. That's... And underscore Adam Scott.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Adam Scott on Parks and Recreation.
Yes. I've never been on Parks and Recreation.
Never.
Were you in Star Trek First Contact for 2 seconds?
I was not in Star Trek.
Oh, that's the other Adam Scott, too.
Yeah. Where can we find you?
See, there's another one.
I don't think we have any overlap in any of the work
in
that
any
I've
aspects
done,
of
I
it.
Don't, I yeah. don't. Not that I can think of.
You can find me on Twitter at Brian Finifter, BRIANFINIFTER. And you can also find me at my podcast, Down in Front, downinfront.net. And we release something every week. Like I said, we do alternative
commentaries.
Record our own commentaries to movies. And we also kind of do more standard recordings episodes like this, too.
Yeah. And what else? If you want in-depth reviews, head on over to shootingthescript.com. That's Adam's site. Where sometimes he argues with Brian with a Y.
Usually I argue with Brian with a Y.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, usually.
Man. Yeah. What else? Follow me on Twitter. I never post anything political. So if you're looking for like political tweets, never for me.
Not going to happen.
I always post about Magic Mike, you know.
Lots of Channing Tatum posts.
If I were the Hispanic version of Magic Mike, I'd be Magic Miguel. Just so you guys know. So that's the stuff I
French
post on Twitter.
Would be Magic Michelle.
Yeah. So that's the kind of stuff I post. So all right, until next time. If you're gonna buy something off Amazon, go click on our link on our website and Amazon will throw us some shekels at our face, literally. So do that and enjoy the shekels thrown in our face. So till next time, have a good week.